Welcome to episode 42 of Val F Bay Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language Val F Bay Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, and usually unprepared. It was such a great weekend, Matt, that usually we record pretty quickly after a match, but this week we had to wait all the way till Thursday. I mean, if Stuttgart wins again next time, we might just have to cancel the podcast altogether.
We are episode 42, which is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. So I don't know what else we have to add.
I think, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Thanks, guys.
This would be our most popular podcast ever, actually. So we'll see how that goes. Well, Austin and Jeff, we were going to let them back on the podcast, considering that now that we're on a nice trend of results, that we were going to talk to them again. But Austin's busy taking care of his grandma, and Jeff's busy taking care of most of Northern California. And all you and I are doing are major, home remodeling projects. So let's ignore our families and the work.
They're all noble pursuits. So yeah, it's the same. Jeff saving lives, me paying somebody to put a floor in my house. It's basically the same thing.
Well, all right, I'll one up you. I'm going to pay somebody to destroy my house. So there you go. And it won't be my seven-year-old. It'll be an actual professional. Speaking of the professionals, Matt, we are not one of them, but you know what? Our club is. Let's dive into part one here. It was a brilliant 1-1 result at Union Berlin. Once again, 2 weeks in a row, we were able to utter those beautiful words, Sosa to Sasha, for the 9th time in their career. Which, by the way, when they said 9, didn't that seem lower than what we expected?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought it's been like 90. It seems like every goal they score, it's the way those two go. This was the 4th match between these two. All time, it's 1-6-1, though, when it comes to all games they've ever played. Back in match day 9, it was a 1-1 draw. This time, it was another 1-1 draw. Back then, it was a 93-minute draw. This time, it was a 90-minute draw. I believe the Union Berlin Twitter account said it perfectly when it said, oh no, Stuttgart again. So here we are again. Before we got into this match, Matt, what were your thoughts as we had 7th place hosting 17th place?
I was feeling pretty good about this one. Union's been on a bit of a bumpy stretch ever since they lost their lead striker at the transfer window or on the holidays. So I thought, we're on an upswing. We've got some good momentum. I felt like we matched up well against them. I did not anticipate how dirty Union would play or how much time they would spend attempting to rip shirts and shorts off of Stuttgart players.
Yeah, I was nervous going into this match. I was cautiously optimistic. I thought we could get a draw. I just didn't know how we were going to score because we struggle against teams that play this gritty. I'll use a positive term against teams that play this physical. And so I just didn't think this was a great matchup for us. I thought we'd get a draw. I didn't expect it to be this way because Union, even though they've only scored, I think, 3 goals since the break, now 4, they're just a tough team that we haven't had a lot of success against historically. So cautiously optimistic like you were, but I was expecting – let's put it this way. I kind of was looking forward to next week's match a little bit because I didn't really have high expectations going into this one. The thing that I noticed first off is that with the lineup, it's kind of like we talked about last week, is Monarazzo went with the old, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Were you surprised at all with Mangala still being out, even though he seemed to be healthy?
I wasn't, but the results we had last week and how well that adjustment worked. I expected to see the exact same thing. So when the lineup came out, not at all surprised. I'm sure Mangala is a little disappointed to be unseated from a firm starting 11 seat, but he'd not been playing great. So it makes a lot of sense to try something else.
And then you mentioned, I think, that Mangala, if he's going to be a super sub, that strengthens your bench quite a bit. And it's going to allow you, I think we'll talk about here in a bit, to adjust the tactics mid-match, which they certainly seem to do, in the second half there. As the game got going, the first thing that really stood out to me, and I know the Union fans don't get a lot of love, but I've got to give a hearty applause to them. Their crowd was so loud. And usually when Stuttgart travels, the Stuttgart away fans dominate the stadium. I don't think I don't think we're being homers here. It's just the Stuttgart away fans are so organized and so loud. I barely heard them this match. So just a shout out to Union's fans. They were loud. They dominated that stadium.
It's always a lot of fun to watch an away game and still hear the Stuttgart songs on the broadcast. You know, if you're hearing it over the broadcast, if they're good and loud in the stadium. But yeah, you're right. And even the commentators mentioned it near the end of the game that the Union fans had been singing the entire match.
Yeah, one of their songs at the end was kind of interesting about how, if not for Shiri, who was the referee, if not for Shiri, you wouldn't have won. So they were pretty bent about the ref. The ref, which we'll talk about here in a bit. But it looked like as this game started, we said it before, it was a tale of two halves. The first half, it was all Union in this one, whether it was the XG or just the pace of the game. Even the announcer said, as entertaining as the match was last week against Gladbach, I believe the word they used was quiet. This match was really quiet. This was a methodical, just kind of feeling out process. And it wasn't the best made for TV match, but what were you thinking when you were watching this?
I was thinking that I needed something more interesting to do. It was it was a slog. Stuttgart looked like they were just confused and unsure of what to do, and like they came in with plan A, mm-hmm. and were trying to do plan A, and Union said no, and like they couldn't quite remember what plan B was, and just look confused and disjointed. And it was really discouraging after the great game we had last week to see them kind of floundering.
Yeah, and I think that's what I think some of the concern was, is playing against a team like Gladbach, who tends to play attractive football. We tend to look good against teams that do that. We've got the pace to be able to do that, and the ball movement to do that. But against teams that play very defensive or park the bus a little bit, we tend to struggle. And it certainly looked like, I mean, it was all Union Berlin the first 30 minutes. And when the first half ends, it's 1-0 Union. Let's talk about Dino for a minute. He had another unfortunate mistake, the handball in the 40th minute that they put away easily for the goal. Dino's been scruffing a little bit. We were talking during the match that he's not on a great run of form right now.
Yeah, and it's hard to say exactly what's wrong with him. And I feel for him on that handball. I don't think it was on purpose. He was turning, his arm got a little bit out from his body. I wouldn't say it was in an unnatural position necessarily, but if that had gone the other way and the ref didn't give it to us, I'd have been furious. So totally get it. But yeah, I don't know if he's been reading our tweets a little too much or been hanging out on the Stuttgart Discord channel where we sing his praises ad nauseum, but he seems to be buying into the hype a little bit, and just it's got him off his game.
It just seems like it's one small thing each match where there's a mistake, whereas earlier in the season he was really steady, and it seemed like Anton was the one who was making a lot of the, not a lot, I shouldn't say that, but one or two just mental errors that turned into a huge mistake. Dino's been on a bit of a streak there. It was funny because that handball initially I was going, oh, come on, that's not a handball. That was a handball.
Yeah.
There wasn't much question there.
It's interesting you mentioned Anton, too, because it's almost, you're right, the two of them kind of have flipped the script. And it's almost like Dino's trying to do more offensively or trying to assert himself more in different areas, and Anton's letting the game come to him more. And as a defensive player, you've got to let the game come to you more than try and force it. If you're trying to push the game a lot, especially when you don't have the ball, bad things are going to happen to you.
Do you think that Pellegrino Monterazzo moving the team more to a back four has impacted Dino? Because it seems like if he's playing that fullback position, that doesn't seem to be his natural spot.
Yeah, it might have. I hadn't really thought about that too much, but it makes sense. If he's trying to engage more offensively anyway, it makes sense to move him out to kind of that wing back spot, give him a little more freedom, let Anton and Ito anchor the defense. But you're right, that wasn't where he was playing when he was really having his great success. So maybe he's trying to flex some muscles he doesn't normally flex in a position he's not used to playing, and that's causing this. That's certainly a reasonable idea.
It's interesting because when Kempf was on the team, him, Anton, and Dino played that back three where they're all basically center backs, and they had Sosa, Silas, or whatever, you know, on the wings there. So I wonder if there's something, you know, to that. But yeah, he's been struggling a little bit. So going into half, I don't know about you. I chalked this up as a loss. I didn't see how we were going to score. I didn't see how we were going to get back into this match. We seemed devoid of ideas. You and I were talking that the approach of going down the wings just wasn't working. And I've been pretty, you know, loud about how we have to stop going down the middle, because going down the middle has caused nothing but turnovers and problems. But showing the deep analysis I have, I was like, you know what we need? We need to go down the middle, and we need Mangala in the second half. So Mangala comes on about the 60-minute mark, give or take. He comes into the match, and Stenzel comes into the match. Dino sits down, and who else was it?
Well, can we talk for just a minute about what prompted Dino to sit down?
Yeah, let's do it.
Have you seen a big ball go faster into a set of small balls than you did at that game? He and the commentator kept saying something about how he got hit in the shin. Buddy, I don't know if that's some English euphemism. That was not his shin.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Initially, on the first view of it, I thought he got hit in the shin pretty hard. And then it wasn't until like a day later that I saw the replay of where the soccer ball actually hit Dino. And it was, let's just say, north of the shin area. And so maybe you're right. Maybe he never recovered from that midsection blow.
What was weird is he seemed to really be struggling with it, which understandably is a pair of gentlemen ourselves. We know what it feels like for that to happen. I totally sympathetic to the fact that that hurts like hell. But then when he got subbed off after limping around on the field for 10 minutes, he seemed really irritated.
Oh, yeah. He seemed angry. And then Thiago Thomas, who was subbed off, seemed very upset as well. Neither of those guys looked very happy. I texted you during the match. I was really surprised Thiago came off. I know he was kind of invisible, but when you bring on Mangala, which I got, and Stenzel, which is never, he's never been a crowd favorite, it just seemed odd to take off an offensive player when you weren't producing any offense at all.
So Stenzel is more of a natural right back, so it made sense to swap him in for Dino. And then Tomas is, I have been really positive about this kid, and I really, really like him. He's been a huge impact player for us. But in this game against Union, they just shut him off. Mm-hmm. And his full response was to kind of run around flailing his arms. And it, I don't know if it's that he hasn't fully downloaded the Stuttgart offense yet, if he doesn't know exactly what's supposed to be going on, but it got me thinking about the fan from his old team who was on the VfB Reddit, who said that the book on this kid is that he's got all the physical tools, but he gets lost on the field a lot. And that he felt lost on the field. So when he got pulled, I was not at all surprised, because he was invisible. He was completely ineffective in that game.
That's a great point. And they were able to move Furich over to that side, I think, because he's got the flexibility to do it. So you had Omar Mamouche on the one side, Furich on the other, and Mangala in the middle. And while the game didn't get noticeably significantly better, the game did get better with Mangala in there. He looked fresh. He looked good. That was some of the best in the middle. He just looked like he was ready to get his starting spot back when he got into that match.
Mangala looked fantastic in the second half. And what I found really interesting is how much Furich, Mangala, and Sosa were kind of rotating and that the left third of the field. And it was, as you said, we need to go up the middle. It was like when Jan had gotten in their heads, Stuttgart only attacks down the left side. And once we started going through the middle, they were the confused team back on their heels that had no plan B.
Right. And then it started to open up things for Sosa on the left because they had to defend the middle there. And so all of a sudden the game plan just kind of opened up a little bit. So let's give a little praise to Matarazzo, because we've been very quick to criticize him and his substitution patterns and the tactics. But this is a brilliant case of seeing the game, recognizing, you know, way more than we do what needed to be done, and putting in a player who is going to make an instant impact, and making the brave decision to take out two starters, really, to two players who have been big all season long, or at least with Thiago's case, you know, in the future going forward. So the game started to pick up. The things started to get better. In the 85th minute, Endo had just a beautiful pass to Kalajic, and he hit it just wide. And I don't know if you remember the text that I sent you immediately after Kalajic hit that one just wide at the 85th minute mark?
I don't.
Okay.
Recap.
I'm glad. I said how great he is, and I know he'll bounce back. Or I said, this guy has been garbage all season long.
Let's go with option A and call you Trav Stadamus.
Yeah. Well, one of those things I said, and not 5 minutes later, Kalajic comes back and makes me look like the moron I am. Let's break that play down a little bit. So there was a long ball to Kalajic. He headed it back. I don't know if you – do you remember Mangala fought pretty hard the Union guy, and the Union guy fell to the ground, and the crowd booed because they thought Mangala had fouled him. Mangala swung it over to Sosa, and it looked like Sosa was going to turn the ball over. You know, he dribbled that a little far, and you could just see him not just pick out where Kalajic was, but it was just a beautiful cross, as we're used to. I don't know what my favorite part of that whole, just the whole series of events, or when Kalajic gets it into the net, Sosa, as cool as can be, just turns around. I don't know if you saw that. It just points the trigger finger. It was just so sweet on so many different levels. I mean, your thoughts on any of those players, any of that the pass, the goal, any of that stuff?
That pass was like centimeter perfect. I don't know how he did that, but he got Sosa in stride. A beautiful volley. I mean, the fact that he was able to control that ball the way he did into the net was super impressive at full blast on the run. But maybe to me, the most interesting part of that is where Sosa was when he launched that pass. He was in the middle of the field, which we usually see him crossing in from the sideline.
Right.
But with that, as we were talking about, Sosa, Furish, and Mangala kind of rotating on that left side, when Furich would go out wide, Sosa would cut in more. And that was causing some real problems from Union. And that's where he found some space and was able to make that awesome pass. And instead of it being kind of an in-swinger from the line, it was a route one over your head, you know, Willie Mays catch kind of ball.
I think Logic, just like the striker he is, like I told you 5 minutes before that play happened.
You called it.
Yep, he was the only body part, his shin, to get it in there. And I mean, like I said, the Union Berlin Twitter account was aghast. They're just like, Stuart again. I think this is the third match out of the four that we've played them that it has ended something like this. So the game comes to an end, a 1-1 draw. The stats had completely flipped too by the time the second half had ended. The XG had gone to 1.8 for Union, 1.5 for Stuttgart. And I wish I had the first half stats, but I misplaced them as I tend to do. But Union was dominating. By the end of the game, though, it was 12 to 11 shots for Union. So Stuttgart had caught up with that. It was 3-3 shots on target, 3-3 corners. Both goalies had two saves. Here's one of the stats that really stuck out to a lot of people after the match. The foul count, 25 fouls for Union, 12 for Stuttgart. And so let's dive into that just for a second. The Union Berlin fans were chanting at the end of the match, if not for the referee, you guys lose this match. I sent you some of the Union Berlin official ticker account. First off, they kind of made fun of Matarazzo's team being so young because they can't drink alcohol, which I thought was, I guess, kind of funny. Something about if I roar after a bratwurst, will the referee bring me one? I don't know what that means, but I like to say it. Our greenkeeper seemed to have perfumed the lawn today. The people from Stuttgart regularly lie on the green and are fed up. Today, the referee beheads more times than France did during the revolution.
Wow.
And it wasn't just the fans. Timo Baumgartel, former VfB Stuttgart player, said after the match that every single 50-50 situation was called for Stuttgart. Let's talk about this just for a second. I looked it up. Union Berlin is the third most fouls in the Bundesliga. So maybe to sound like a homer, it sounds like they're crying wolf a little bit.
They are totally. And I'll give them this. The refereeing in this game sucked. It was bad all around. There were calls that, you know, in one instance, a player would grab another player by the shirt and rip him to the ground. and there's no call. And 3 minutes later, the same thing happens and it's a yellow card. There was no consistency, which has got to be super frustrating. But I'm the risk of being a total homer on a total homer podcast. Union were playing dirty, just straight up dirty, and grabbing guys. And, you know, as I said at the beginning of this, you know, ripping their shirts and shorts right off. It was ridiculous. And the fact that the ref let as much go as he did was ridiculous. And Timo, I loved Timo Baumgartner when he played in Stuttgart, but he was a whiner when he played for us. And he has not gotten any better about that playing for Union.
Yeah, he was beaten on the play where Kalajic scored the goal. He helped deflect the ball in the first match when Vahir scored the goal. So he's been directly responsible and, well, partially responsible for the results here. Yeah, it just was a bad look. I think I actually have a lot of praise for Union Berlin and the way they play. I mean, they know how to play. They're what's that phrase? They are a sum of the parts, or they're the whole.
The whole is greater than some of the parts.
Yeah, whatever. They're one of those things.
Inspirational message there, coach.
Go get them, kids. They know how to play, and they're clearly having a much better season than Stuttgart is. So I have a lot of praise for teams that figure out how to play and know their style, and that's what they do. But in this case, I mean, you're the third most egregious team in the league when it comes to fouls. Yeah. So this is no surprise. The problem, it's interesting because I always say Union Berlin is one of the smartest teams out there. But for whatever reason against us, they always have some lapse mentally at the end of the match that allows us, in three of the four times we played them in the Bundesliga at least, to get points that maybe we don't deserve.
It's almost like they're expecting Stuttgart to just capitulate after kicking them in the shin over and over for the game. Mm-hmm. And we don't. And it's like they don't know how to handle that. And I bet a lot of other teams get worn down from all the bullying all over the field. And by the end of the game are just waiting to get back on the bus to get out of there.
Yeah, it's kind of like in the NFL. We talk about a team that runs the ball a lot. By the fourth quarter, the defense doesn't want to play defense anymore because they've been pounded for three straight quarters.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of credence to what you say there, yeah.
Well, Union's style of play, you're totally right. It's smart. They play a smart, mostly disciplined from the standpoint of keeping their shape and being in the positions they're supposed to be in, defensive structure. But it reminds me of, let me reach way back here for our younger kids, the 1990s New Jersey Devils of the NHL. And they ushered in a style that changed all of hockey in North America. And they called it the dead puck era, because it was all clutching and grabbing and pulling, and just nobody was scoring any goals. And it's watching Union reminded me of those New Jersey Devils teams, who drove me insane as a Detroit Red Wings fan, because we had some of the most skilled offensive players in the world who couldn't do jack against Jersey because they were in bear hugs the whole game. So Union's trying, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to gum up the field. They're trying to slow play down. And when you do that, you're going to draw fouls. And if you've got a more effective referee, he throws out a couple of yellow cards right away to send the message of this is not okay. And then the game should open back up a little bit. But I don't think refs are calling them on that. And that's why they continue to do it. And to their credit, if it's working, you know, keep going.
It definitely seems like a style that is very dependent on who is refereeing that particular match, how tight they might be calling it or not.
I think if Felix Breich had been refereeing that, Union would have maybe been called for three, because he is a noted Stuttgart hater.
Well, he's Dr. Felix Breich to you, sir.
Not to me. I don't recognize his doctoring authority.
You're unofficial to us, sir. I wonder what he is a doctor in, by the way.
Hating VfB Stuttgart.
I wonder how many classes you have to take to get that degree.
Two.
Probably. All right. Well, let's wrap up the match with this thought. Is Stuttgart played a very attractive team last week in Gladbach. You know, plays attractive football. I think what a lot of people were really happy about is we played a very gritty, dirty team. I think, you know, Ricky Palm or Vertical Pass said this. They wrote an article about how Union is a shite team. They play shite football. And
Yep.
And he was praising them, actually. Just that's kind of like we just did. And the fact that Stuart was able to get a result against an attractive playing team and a team like this, I mean, I think that's the biggest takeaway, that going into Union and Bielefeld, which probably play closer to Union than they play Gladbach, this was a good sign that we were able to keep our composure, keep in the match, and ultimately get the confidence to get a result out of a match that against a team that's a tough play.
Yeah, if you can play that, you know, nice football like you did, like we did against like Leverkusen, and play against teams that are trying to play and keep up with them, and also get down in the mud with a team like Union and still manage to get a result, I think that says a lot, not only about the skill level, but about the mentality of the team, which we've been saying all season, it's a minor miracle that they haven't imploded. But I think we've got a lot of mentally tough, if inexperienced kids on this team that are just showing that they've got what it takes to survive this slog through the relegation fight.
Yeah, and I think that is a perfect segue for part two, headlines and questions, because the attention around the Bundesliga has gone away from the dumpster fire that is Stuttgart to the dumpster fire that another team, a northern team, a capital team is. So let's talk about them for a little bit in part two, headlines and questions. But as usual, Matt, let's lead off with the Discord scene. Any news on the social media Discord scene?
Discord was pretty quiet, mostly comments about how much Union was clutching and grabbing and the garbage officiating. But when the games are boring, the Discord is boring. And some veered off into, you know, non-football related conversations just because people were looking for something else to talk about. But not a whole lot going on there until Sasa got that goal.
Yeah, the Reddit scene was pretty just quiet as well. You know, just kind of like, oh, thank God we got through that one there. So yeah, not a lot going on, but 4 points in the last two matches is awesome. So why don't we dive into some headlines here? I'll throw a couple things at you and let's talk about whatever kind of piques our interest. The good news is the VfB under 19 team is first in their region, is heading to the Pokal final against Dortmund's U19 team. But the U21 team that had Didavi play for it this past weekend is only 1 point above relegation, just lost their last match. And so there's some interesting talk that, you know, one of the clubs is doing great, but the other one might get relegated to whatever, what would be the equivalent of the fifth tier of German football. Any thoughts on any of that?
I get Didavi away from those kids. We don't want them learning bad habits from him.
Yeah, that's got to be a rough go for everybody involved, right?
Yeah, I mean, he can't feel good about that.
Yeah, that could be good for his self-esteem. Speaking of not feeling good, now, I'm a big believer in karma, so I don't like to pile on to other teams or other players. And let's talk about Hertha Berlin for a second as we're piling on. Mark Oliver Kempf played so, how should I say this? He was so noticeable on the pitch during the match versus Gladbach this weekend that the announcer called for him to be subbed out at halftime. And you never see a center back subbed out at halftime. He was directly responsible for a penalty kick. So there's that storyline in Hertha. The other storyline is that our buddy Korkut just got sacked. They just hired somebody who was before our time, or at least my time, Felix Magath. And the Bundesliga world is a buzz with this news. I'm going to let you take the floor here on, let's talk Hertha for a sec. What do you got?
They're a hot mess, man. When was the last time you heard an announcer call for a player, any player, to be subbed off before halftime that was not specifically injury related? Like, I don't, MLS, Bundesliga, English Premier League, I can't recall a time when they were, an announcer was lobbying to have a player removed from the pitch. That's crazy.
Yeah, Mark Oliver is struggling just like the rest of that club is. And you and I talked about it. I don't get it. Kempf is a defensive player and a solid one at that. Santi Escobar, who most Stuttgart fans love, is a solid defensive player. Korkut, when he was here, was a solid defensive coach. I mean, the matches we lost were 1-0, 2-0 stuff. That, whatever's going on there, this, I'll tie this back to Stuttgart a little bit. Thank God no matter, I don't even know what's going to happen in the next 7 or 8 matches. We did not dump Pellegrino Matarazzo. I mean, just looking at what's happening to another club that is really exactly at the same place we are on the table. Oh my gosh. Take that as a cautionary tale.
I went and looked at the, I was trying to remember when McGough had been manager at Stuttgart. And I think it did precede me following the team, but just looking at the a history of the coaches in the year, and like in 2019 alone, we had 3 different managers. And you look at that and you can directly tie these cycles of chaos in the club to managerial turnover. And even, I mean, sometimes it's necessary, right? But there are times where, like this year, where Matarazzo's maybe struggled a little bit, where you gotta, you know, sit your guy down and say, I got faith in you, you gotta pick it up, but we're gonna ride this out, because the alternative is to just rip the guts out of a team and try again. I don't think that's an effective way of having long-term success.
Yeah, it's the only thing you can hope for is the famous quote unquote coaching bounce. Yeah. Where a new guy comes in and you all of a sudden roll off 2 or 3 results. But statistically, I've read a couple of books on this, that there's not a coach's bounce. The numbers tend to stay the same as they've always been when everything is said and done.
Yeah. And
I mean, you feel for any team that's going through what they're going through, just because I don't want that to be us. And there's still some time left for them to right the ship. And let's face it, other than goal difference, you know, things are pretty similar, but we're not similar, right? We have some consistency, which is crazy because nobody equates Stuttgart with this.
Right.
Where they're just, yikes, they're in a lot of trouble.
I feel like we've got a front office with a plan and with an idea of who they are and what the team is and how they want to do business. And it doesn't feel like Hertha Berlin has that right now. And it's hard to do anything if you don't have your basic ethos of what you're doing figured out.
And it's crazy because Freddie Bobic had such a great reputation with what he did at Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. And everything has been, whew, boy, just falling apart here. Speaking of things falling apart a little bit, it looks like the sponsor for Stuttgart, Mercedes-Benz, it's not 100% by any means, but it looks like it's getting closer and closer to a foregone conclusion that Mercedes-Benz may stop being the logo sponsor for Stuttgart. They're actually pulling out of a lot of their deals. They used to sponsor a tennis tournament in Stuttgart. They're pulling out of that. So it could be more than just a VfB. We have to send a quick shout out to Ted down in Cincinnati, because he has come up with what I think is the greatest hashtag for this club for the rest of the season. And if Rust-Oleum doesn't get their act together, Matt, do you want to tell our listeners who are going after to be the new sponsor?
We'll all be singing Hooray Beer. We want Red Stripe.
We are ready for Red Stripe. Jamaica, Stuttgart, all tied together. Let's do this. Let's get it done. Ted, that was fantastic. The Hooray Valve Bay is now one of my favorite chants and one of my favorite cheers here. So Mercedes-Benz, you know what? It has been nice. Actually, please don't leave. But if you do.
Red Stripe makes perfect sense. It's a beer with a red stripe on it. We're a football team with a red stripe on it. And I'm sure if you give me some time, I can make up a bunch of garbage about a Jamaica connection or a reason why there should be a Jamaica connection. And this thing should just, it should happen. It should be done already.
And if it does happen, you, my friend, are going to be like the guy who didn't make the post-it notes, but almost made the post-it notes, who got none of the money like the other guy did, because this was your idea. This is your baby.
Yeah, you know, if it happens, I'll be happy with it. And even if Teddy gets all the credit, as long as he sends me some red stripes, we'll be fine.
Well, Ted, you heard what you've got to do to share the good times in the province here. But great idea there. Let's move on to some questions. Village Football asks, are Valmet Bay's next 2 games win or bust, or should they just target 1 win and a draw? Frankly, I'm just saying to myself, don't lose. All right, so we got Augsburg and Bielefeld coming up. Are these must wins?
I feel like Augsburg, yeah, actually, now I'm looking at the table, like, yeah, maybe. Like, don't lose for sure. If we can get a draw out of one of them, I don't think I'll shed any tears, but we're really, I mean, these are the 2 teams immediately in front of us on the table, and especially Armenia's lost 3 in a row. So that's a full week away. We need to concentrate on Augsburg first, but I feel like these are two games we really should win. And if we want to get out of the cellar, we need to win, because it could be really easy to leapfrog those two and relieve some of the pressure on the team.
Yeah. Yeah. Because as happy as we are right now, the fact is we're still in 16th place and it's only by goal difference. And while Hertha looks like a disaster, and they've got a rough schedule coming up, but they play a lot of high level teams, you know, down the stretch of the season. So I would hate for this to come down to the last match of the season. So if we can get some results here, I'm a little worried about Bielefeld. They just looked really good in the match I saw, and they were missing six starters because of COVID. So that's a tough team. But to answer the question of the Village Football, I don't think they're must win. I even think with 2 points, we're still on the right track. But boy, getting a win versus Augsburg, a team that demolished us in the first half of the season, would not only put them under some pressure, but relieve some of the pressure from us. And in front of 40-some thousand fans in Mercedes-Benz Arena / Red Stripe Arena, that would be, you know, fantastic. So I'm going to say it's not must win. I'm going to say, if we can get at least 3 points out of those next two, I think we're in pretty good shape.
I feel like as long as the team keeps playing positively and, you know, we don't start seeing infighting or listlessness on the field, as long as we're staying positive, we're going to be okay. But winning these games would go a long way to being very okay.
Yeah. Joe asked in the next question, if we are in 16th to come to the end of the season, how do you fancy our chances in the playoffs against one of the two B teams? It would be Werder Bremen if the season ended today, by the way. And do you think winning the playoff would be beneficial to the team's morale going into next season? I'm going to start with this one. I'm going to say no, because I think a lot of the team, if this team plays in the playoff, a significant portion of the roster probably won't be the same next year, even if we stay up in the Bundesliga. I've seen enough of those relegation games where unless you're the second league team, you don't get confidence out of that. It's embarrassing is what it is. And I remember watching, I think, Bremen one of the years before they got relegated, Wolfsburg, when they were in that relegation match, those players weren't happy about that. It's stressful, and you did what you were supposed to do. When Union Berlin won, okay, that was a different story. But no, I don't think it's going to be a confidence booster, because I don't think we'll have the same players in the second, you know, next season per se. And I think it's more embarrassing, you know, than anything else.
I think it's more of a winning that game is less of a cause for celebration than a cause for a giant sigh of relief. Because if you lose, it's tragedy. And if you win, you feel very fortunate to not have succumbed to tragedy.
Yeah.
It's like that tornado just missed my house. You're not cheering about that. You're wiping the sweat off your brow and saying, thank goodness.
And his second question is a tough one, because as of right now, we'd be playing Bremen. I don't know how I fancy our chances against a team from the second league. Historically, the second league is a little bit more like Union Berlin, you know, a physical league. But there are so many former Bundesliga clubs in that league right now that depending on who we play, I don't know what we would get. I will say this, though, depending on how we play against Augsburg and Bielefeld, I think will tell me a lot about how I think we play against one of those B2 teams, because Augsburg, Bielefeld, Union, historically B2 type style of club. So if we play okay against those teams, I think we do okay against a Bremen or something like that.
Yeah, and I think Union plays a B2 style with a lot of B1 talent. So they were able to keep up with some of our speed. They were able to move the ball around better than a lot of second division teams would. But that clutch grab, defense first, make life miserable for your opponent, that's grade A Bundesliga 2 style play. So I don't know. I feel like we could and should win if we have that game, but I don't even want to think about it. We're going to win, and we're going to not have to worry about it.
Yeah. Shut your mouth, Joe. Sorry. But also thanks for
stop being so negative, you jerk. And thanks for the question.
And thanks for being part of the podcast. Don't come back. Here, Robin asked a great question. If you could franchise tag 3 players for next season, so let's assume we stay up in the first league, but not Sosa or Sasha, who would you choose? Joe basically chose the entire roster when he was answering this question. I love this question, though. So of those of the current roster, If you could franchise three of them to stay on the team for sure, who would it be?
Well, so does it, do we have to take into account like players that are likely to leave? Because like Endo would be a prime candidate, but I don't think Endo's going anywhere. I think he's with us for the long haul. So let's focus on younger players. I'm going to say Ito, Furich, and Tomas, Thiago Tomas.
Oh, okay.
Because he's, as much as he flailed and suffered against Union, kid's been like a lightning bolt to the team. And Chris Furich has been one of the few positive offensive forces on this team for most of the season. So I feel like those two guys could be engines that make things go. And Ito, like, I'm continually impressed by Ito. Let's remind ourselves, he was supposed to be on this U19 team this year and never sniffing the first division. And he's not only holding his own, but he's playing very, very well.
It's crazy. We've gone this entire podcast without mentioning him. And he was, with Anton, the strongest, you know, of the three in the back. I mean, the guy's just, the kid has just been playing great. You're right. I would probably go with Mangala. I would go with, I would try to keep the back strong. So I would go with Mangala. I would go with Anton. I would go with Dino. I think Dino's not going to be long for the club. And while I was going through a little growing pains right now, I think his future's pretty bright. So
yeah,
I'd probably go with those three up there. No offensive players though. So that, my team's not going to score any goals, so that's not going to be great.
That's all right. Mine's not going to play much defense.
Wait, hey, do you want to join teams?
It's an interesting idea.
You do that. All right, guys. Well, thank you for the questions for this episode. Let's move on to part three and wrap this up, Matt. We are hosting FC Augsburg. There's going to be more than 45,000 people in the stands in Stuttgart, which is going to be fan-flippin-tastic. Augsburg is 2-1-2 in their last five. They are coming off a 0-1 loss to, I believe, Bielefeld, I think.
Oh, they won. 1-0 win over Bielefeld.
That's what I meant. Don't correct me. 1-0 win over Bielefeld. Sorry, sir. Yeah, and Valby is 1-1-3 in the last five, but we got 4 points in our last two matches. And the first half of the season, we lost 1-4 on the road. Furich had a wonderful goal, but then immediately hurt himself and was gone. And then the thing I remember about this match the most is the free kick debacle that Augsburg went on to score four straight to win 4-1. And it was just free kick after free kick after free kick. We couldn't guard a thing. And it was just a blowout. The match was over. The starters in that one were Al-Ghadoui, Klimowitz, Didavi, Kemp, and Bredlow. So I don't think we've seen any of those guys this week. What are your thoughts going into this one before we get into what the betting predictors have given the spread?
So Augsburg just beat Bielefeld, as you mentioned. And the week before that, they drew against Dortmund 1-1, which sounds pretty positive. But the week before that, they lost to some team called Freiburg. Sorry, I mean, who even are those jokers? I feel like this is a game that Stuttgart should win 1-2, and as long as we don't get into set piece hell like we did the first time we played them, we should be okay.
Yeah, I'm feeling it's hard when we play Augsburg. You always feel weird about this club because they're the club that's always predicted to get relegated. It's just they don't have the resources, they don't have the talent, and they've got a coach that neither of you or I really believe in, Marcus Weindrill, but they figured out a way to do it and they always stay up. The funny thing is we beat them twice last year. So it's not like they're this big bugaboo team for us. So I should feel more confident in it. I'm kind of reversing my tactic, like I sort of talked about last week, where I think the crowd is a bit of a, puts too much pressure on the players. I just think there's something with this particular crowd and this particular team that they work really well together. I like Stuttgart's chances in this one to at least get a point. What do you think the betting prediction is?
Are we at home?
We are.
Yes. You said that already. I wasn't paying attention.
I don't listen.
I'm sorry. What did she say to me?
Good job, Austin.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm going to say they're going to give Augsburg half a goal.
They do give Augsburg half a goal.
I'm going to Vegas, baby.
Watch out. Put it all on red or white. All right.
Red stripes. All on red stripes.
I'll take half a Red Stripes, please.
Hooray, hangover.
How do you see this one ending?
I'm going to say Stuttgart will take it 2-1.
2-1, all right. So you're going to take Stuttgart minus the half a goal. I think I'm taking Stuttgart every time on this podcast. Would it be bad form to go against Stuttgart on this podcast?
Go with your gut.
Well, when it comes to predictions, I'm leading with 119 wins to 103 losses. Austin's got 115 wins. Matt, you've got 113, so you're catching up. Jeff is right behind you at 109. With our Stuttgart picks, though, Jeff's in the lead with 14 wins. Austin's got 12. I've got 12. Matt, you've got 11. That's a long way for me to say, what the heck. I'll take Stuttgart in this one, minus half a goal. Look at the comments.
If you don't start making some bad choices with these, I'm not going to be able to catch you. So that's bad. I need you to pick Augsburg or Bielefeld next week so that I can overtake you.
I will probably take Bielefeld next week simply because they have a goalie who I think is amazing in Ortega. And I don't know how you get past that guy. So I'll save my negativity for one more week just for you. And then I'll go Stuttgart in this one. I like the crowd support. I like the confidence the team has. I like that Matarazzo has shown tactically he can alter the game plan. I like that we have the players that can alter the game plan. I like that Hertha is on fire and sinking to the bottom of the ocean right now. I'm interested more so to watch, I think, the Hoffenheim match as they are traveling to Hertha Berlin for that one. Hoffenheim just came off a draw versus Bayern, so I'm really looking forward to see, does Hertha get the coaching bounce, or is this like last year with Schalke when they brought in an old coach from the past where it just fell apart even worse? So I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to that one there. Let's wrap this up with the international break is coming after this match. So if we can get a good result for Augsburg, it's going to be a fantastic 2-week break for us. It'll be a fantastic break for our listeners because they won't have to listen to us. It'll just, everybody's going to win. But let's wrap it up with a big match that's taking place in the US of A next Thursday, Mexico versus the United States in the World Cup qualifiers. It's USA plus half a goal in Mexico. What are you doing?
This is really tough because this USA team is so hard to figure out. They've got a lot of talent. A lot of the guys on that team are playing in the Bundesliga, playing in the English Premier League, in Spain and Italy. We should be good, but it's like you get them together and the weight of the shirt drags them all down. I feel like since it's in Mexico, we're going to spoil everybody's fun and the US is going to win, but that Mexican team is really dangerous.
So you're taking?
Take Estados Unidos.
Ooh, well, I'm going to take whatever the heck it was you just said. I'm going to take Mexico in this one. I don't have a lot of faith in our countrymen here. The crowd in Mexico is always pretty brutal, very supportive of the home team. And plus, really, barring a disaster, the USA is going to qualify for the World Cup. What's that, Trinidad, Tobago? They're on line two? Okay, we'll take that phone call there.
Don't see the issue with Trinidad and Tobago is you're playing two nations at the same time. You got to take one at a time. Mexico's one country. It's not two. We should be okay.
You would think, though, with the United States having something around 50 states, I can't, you know, nobody knows the whole number.
With uncertain.
Up to 50 states, we'd be able to counter two countries.
Well, but there's states versus two countries. So it's, you know, it's like two bananas versus a banana tree. Right? That makes perfect sense.
I mean, take it to the bank, people. Banana versus a banana tree.
I'm going to stick with my pick of the US, but what I really think it is every time we play a team that we should pound, we fall apart and lose. And every time we play a good team, we play really well. So I think they're going to come into Mexico knowing Mexico is really good. I assume this is at the Azteca in Mexico City, which is a super intimidating place to play. And I think the guys are going to show up because they have a tendency to do that. And then they'll lay an egg against Panama.
You know what team you basically just described?
What's that?
Welcome to Valley Stuttgart Americana. Episode 42. This is just going to be on an endless loop. Well,
round and round we go.
All right, kids, remember, don't have a banana in a banana tree fight. That's where we're going to leave it today. Thanks so much for joining me today, Matt. We'll talk to you next week, hopefully after a big Stuttgart victory once again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Travis.